This is episode 138 of Drunk on Comics, brought to you by InkWhiskey.com.
Bullshit. And hi.
That's pretty much what we do. we'll just get it kicked right off. This is Drunk on Comics. My name's Derek.
My name's Tony.
And welcome to our weekly show where we're going to talk about comics and some more comics and probably a lot of random bullshit, because I think everybody's like, oh, you have a show about comics? And I'm like, no, we have a show about bullshit.
I was going to say, we do start off with random dumb story of our week or whatever, and
I want to share a random dumb story with you myself. So saw Kevin last night. He's been away for a little while with some family stuff, and was able to catch up with him and his wife last night, and some other friends of my girlfriend and I as well. We played Cards Against Humanity. It's the first time I've ever played that game.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you like it?
Oh, my God, dude. My cheeks still hurt. Like, I was laughing so hard at some of the things that we had. And
well, knowing your mind, too, like, I can only imagine the cards that you played
and the things that I picked.
Mm-hmm.
There's one that I actually took a picture of a few of them. But my favorite one, I can't even say that.
You can. People have played cards. They know what it is.
Okay, well, this was the profoundly handicapped. Hours of fun, easy to use, perfect for snorting coke off a clown's boner. there was one. It was a three-card one. It was like, hey, guys, I saw this crazy movie last night. It opened on blank, and then they showed some stuff about blank, and it ended on blank. And mine won, and my answer was, hey, guys, I saw this crazy movie last night. It opened on Skeletor. Then it showed some stuff about my Pretty Pretty Princess board game, and it ended with lots and lots of abortions. I'm like, it was so vile. Like, I mean, that game was just terrible. There's stuff about fisting that was going on in there.
It is definitely a game that, well, all my friends have it, so there's no reason for me to buy it, but I really want to. But you ever hear of, like, the promotions that they do for the...
Yeah.
The bullshit, and then they also have some random cards that you can have customized with your name on it, which is also fun to...
Yeah, I know that they did one for Kwanzaa like that. But, yeah, that was a hell of a hellaciously fun game.
You're going to play it again?
I can't wait to. I cannot wait to, because there's, like, so many foul things in there. One of them last night was the new fad diet is, and the card that won was AIDS. I'm like, Jesus Christ. This is terrible. But all right, let's get things kicked off here. Couple things here first. Just a reminder, stick around till the end of the show. We do have a contest going on.
Oh, shit. Did you come up with a question? Because we forgot to talk about that.
No. I figured you got it covered.
Oh, fuck.
I've got a question in mind.
Okay.
So the next thing that we need to mention, if you haven't answered questions from the previous 3 weeks, you still can go back and do that. We have one question today, and then we have one final double bonus question next week. When you do that, make sure you email us at drunkoncomics@gmail.com. Give us your name, your address, and whether you're following us on Twitter, and if you are, what your handle is, and or if you're following us on Facebook, we should be able to tell by your name. So we'll get to that stuff later. One other announcement later on this week, special interview with Mr. Dirk Manning.
Yes, I can't wait to have that crazy bastard on again. And
yeah, and we forgot to say happy birthday to him before, but he's 21, so he can start drinking now. All right, Tony, you want me to kick it off this week?
Yes.
All right, I am starting off the shelf here with my top shelf choice of probably the. This is easily, I think, the best ongoing series that's come out in probably the last 15, maybe even 20 years, with Saga. And this is chapter 25, otherwise, you know, for you simpletons, issue 25. And this is arts by Fiona Staples, written by Brian K. Vaughan, letters and designs by Phonographics. For anybody that doesn't know what this story is about, I'll just give a brief synopsis, where basically you have two separate races, a man and a woman who's the world, and it's from the moon of the that same world where their races, one's on the moon, one's on the world, and they basically get in, their races get into a war. It's been going on for eons, and the two of them fall in love and they have a child. And so you have a lot of people chasing them for the baby. There's family strife going on. It's really difficult to try and sum this up, but the term space opera is probably the best way to explain what this is. But one of the things, Tony, that I kind of wanted to talk to you about was the unique take on how this story has been narrated by the baby. And, you know, it's one of these things where the baby is now, I think, probably three-ish, because she's, you know, she's walking, she's walking, she's talking. You know, that was nice because between the breaks in the book, they kind of age her slightly. Okay. Normally. This one was, this just came back from a break. It really wasn't quite the same length of time. But it's interesting because you have a narrator throughout this entire story, where a lot of stories don't have a true narrator. And you tend to forget sometimes on this, which I think is one of the most brilliant parts of how this book works, is that, oh, okay, yeah, you know, it's like all of a sudden you're getting caught into it, and then there's the words. And she'll say something like, and this is where, you know, my parents first learned that blank can never be blank, and I'll let you put your own Cards Against Humanity in there for you. You know, I'm making stuff up mostly because I don't want to give away certain aspects. But Hazel, which is the baby's name, she, you know, she's clearly an adult as the narrator. Mm-hmm. She's looking back at her life. And Jesus, the way that Vaughn uses this character kills me, because she'll break your heart like every chance, where it'll basically be like, and I'm pointing, and here's, and this is where my parents learned that our dog had cancer. You know, or that was the last time that they knew our dog before they found out it had cancer. You're like, what the fuck? What? God, that's the kind of shit that he drops in there. And it just, it's one of the most emotional books you'll ever see from that aspect. The artwork by Staples, and the colors in here too are just fucking amazing. One of the things that...
The gecko piss?
Yeah, it's a giant salamander dragon thing that's pissing all over them. Because, well, they're trying to get dragon sperm in this.
Okay.
And so they catch themselves a dragon, and they're going to go slice its nuts open, but then they go, uh-oh, that's not a boy. And the females just piss all over, and they're like, well, why does it piss all over? Because it's marking them for its family to kill them. Oh. So, yeah. A couple things on the artwork in particular is, this is the first time I think I've ever seen a dog shaking water off of itself that's been drawn.
I wouldn't call that water.
Well, okay, call it piss. Dragon piss. Yeah, piss and water. But it just, I was shocked, because I'm like, A, who the fuck would bother drawing that? B, how do you do it? And C, holy shit, Staples pulled it off, which just, you know, really, really amazed me. There's another great thing in here, too, is that, you know, there's kind of a little fan favorite character of the little guy. His name is Goose, G-U-G-H-U-S, and there's an umlaut over the U, so I'm assuming it's Goose.
Wait, what's over it?
Umlaut. The two dots over a U, that's called an umlaut.
Never knew that.
Yeah.
Teaching me stuff.
Yeah. Tony learning letters today. But he's the little baby seal wearing the...
he's wearing the overalls. Thing.
Yeah. He's adorable. Well, Goose is back in this, and he's just one of those people. He's just so cute. Like, he's just like, he's very happy and very shy and, you know, just very pure. And I think that's one of the other great things is that with this book, there's such a wide variety of characters. You do have people that are very pure and innocent. You have people that are very, very evil. You have people that are they do bad things, but they aren't doing them for evil reasons. You know, you have people that are doing good things only because they kind of have to, you know, not because they necessarily want to. And then you have people that are actually doing good things, you know, and trying to live a good life. And people fall. They make mistakes. Nobody in this book is perfect. And that's what I think I really like about it. To tie this up, if you're not reading Saga, I would recommend just go buy the first four trades, or the first three were bound together in the hardbound for $50. Mm-hmm. You know, so the first 18 issues, and then you can buy the next six in trade. Or if you're brave enough, just jump right in. You're going to be a little confused, but because of the fact that you have that narrator, this is a book you can actually jump in on. And I think that's one of the things where, you know, at 25 issues in, how do you do that? So I think this is a good example of it. But
keep going.
No.
I was going to say, I'm just thinking of the perfect ending for this. So
there's not going to be a perfect ending. There's going to be a break your heart ending, I think.
Yeah. And what it is it shows her as an adult and just her face and her saying, you know, and that's my story, pans out a little bit more, and you see she's in the Alzheimer's ward.
She's in a snow globe. It's all a dream.
So did everything she say really happen, or was it just made up?
Yeah.
That would really piss you off. I know that.
No, she's all cracked out. You know, she's tripping on LSD or you know, some form of it. But anyway, guys, check this book out. Also, I do want to give one other shout out. I didn't notice it when I first picked it up, but gorgeous wraparound cover.
Oh, I always love when they do that.
Yeah. Really, really beautiful wraparound cover on this one. So, there was one other funny thing I've told you about Lion Cat before. Well, actually, you've read some. You just aren't caught all the way up yet. Lion Cat's in here, and the little girl that they rescued from the sex world. Somebody is making a very sarcastic comment, like, oh, I'd love to do that. And you see Lion Cat going, la, and the little girl's like, shh. So, all right, guys, pick up Saga. You'll love it. Tony?
All right, what I picked up this week, Spawn 250. Now, it has been ages since I actually read Spawn, and I've picked up, I think, an issue or two here or there when they were doing a new suit or whatever.
Minus a random issue here and there, would you say it's somewhere between 200 and 225 issues since you've read Spawn regularly?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, about that. Now, I always kept up on a little bit of, like, the lore and everything of what's going on. I understand who some of these characters are. This issue, just reviewing it on the issue alone, I still want to say you could pick it up and enjoy it, not knowing what's going on, as long as you at least know Al Simmons, who is the original Spawn, is dead. There's a new Spawn, which I found out his name is Jim Downing. If you at least know that, then you at least have a basis of kind of what's going on within this book.
Is the clown still around?
Clown is still around. trying to do this review without having looked up anything of, you know, on the internets of what the fuck happened, explain this. The only thing that I do remember, so I'm doing everything based off of just knowledge. I actually didn't look up anything to try to help me out with this because, like I said, I want to do this one book in and of itself. There was a giant war, the Heaven and Hell War, one of the many costume changes when Spawn was able to get wings. He then became Omega Spawn, huge demon, evil guy. And then I guess he, Al Simmons, shot his head off and died. And that's how there was then a new Spawn, this new Jim Downing. Sam and Twitch, who are two cops that kind of, you know.
Oh, I forgot about Sam and Twitch.
Yeah. They're predominantly in here. Just to start off, this book, two things that I want to say. One, trying to find out who all worked on this, I'm like, where the fuck is the, you know, title page? Oh, it's inside the last page. They're like, we don't care, read this book. Secondly, this is a thick book. And
how much was it?
It was $5.99. But
okay, yeah, so it's
no advertisements either.
Is that a Scotty Young cover?
Yes, I picked that one up. I thought it was kind of funny.
There were a shit ton of covers.
Yeah, and that was kind of hard. The people who draw Spawn, like, it's just so vividly medieval, awesome, cool.
Well, and that cape, you know, it's always about the cape with Spawn.
Well, that's what kind of like, almost like Angela's flowing ribbons. Now I kind of get an idea of their magical powers come from fabric in this world. So, like I said, just reading this as a book alone starts off with it talking about an infestation and these cockroaches, and then they were a nuisance, and then now they're pretty much kind of overrunning the city. People who are, you know, rats are coming up, birds and bats in the sky, people who are trying to get out of the city, these bugs are just kind of blocking the bridge, and every time, you know, people try to smash them out, they come back tenfold. So pretty much these things are keeping people within New York. And from when people are trying to evacuate the city through helicopter or plane, the birds come in and pretty much attack. Pretty much there's this evilness that is happening within the city. And one of the big things is they are crawling and forming letters or numbers or stuff within. And there's three distinctive letters. Ones that looks like either an L or a 7, another one that's a V, and then another one that's like an I. And what
The L, the 7, and the V could all be the same thing. It just depends on which angle you're looking at.
Yeah, but they have them distinctly, what they're seeing as being repeated.
And the I's just, it's an L, a 7, or a V that's only halfway done.
Yeah. that's within this whole book, those things definitely play a part where, cop is it? Which one's a skinny little dude? That's Sam, right? Or that's Twitch.
I think that's Twitch.
Yeah, that's Twitch.
I think, but then again, it's been 200 to 225 issues since I've read Spawn 2, so.
He pretty much starts looking into it a little bit further and realizing that it could be Roman numerals, a 5, a 1, and a 7. Or the V could be a 5. So 517, 175. Rearrange all those in different orders and you get dates.
8675309.
I think they actually had him give that number a call.
Yeah.
And what they're finding out is when certain people have died within this new Spawn's like rise or being up, you know, something happened. What time was that? 157. Holy shit. What day was that? Well, that was May 17th, 5th month, 17th day. So these numbers have a lot to do with what's going on, which is a fun part of reading this story because they're like, well, what time is it? Oh, it's 5:16. Well, got another minute till something big happens, which then it does.
Does anybody, like when they go, what time is it? Do they ever go, it's hammer time?
No.
No? Okay.
I did want to say there's a...
The story,
like I said, it you can follow it with just knowing it's almost kind of like a horror story of shit overrunning the city, but Spawn's there.
Okay, so here's my question, because I know that this is the last book Todd McFarlane is writing. So, okay, just curiosity, who did the art on this one? Yeah, you started to get there, and then...
Yeah, and then I got Simon Krudansky.
Okay.
And John Boy.
Excuse me. So, I'm just curious, like, without giving anything away, and, like, without, you know, actually, like, just telling the whole story, how did he leave it? Like, could you tell this is a definite bookend for McFarlane, where or did he just end it like any other comic book, where it's like, okay, yep, the story's going to move on from here, or was it, did it make sense that this is his last book?
Like, you could get that sense of a lot of what they've been doing is building up to this. This has answered some things for people that have read it, to see the Spawn as he is now, Jim, leave this world, and surprise, Al Simmons comes back to reprise his role as Spawn. So you get that where, okay, now what's going to happen with this character? So it can continue on. I know for a fact issue number 251 is going to be a great starting point for a lot of people, because mm-hmm. you can follow that. There's just some things within here that I want to say besides the story. The artwork, just amazing. However, I've never known that Spawn has pretty much turned into symbiote Venom, because as he's trying to, as Jim, who has become kind of an angel, has angel wings, is trying to get away from the symbiote.
The Spawn costume?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it pretty much, that's now become a main key part of the story. With it being sentient, with it being within the book, it explained how it's trying to pretty much take over Jim and become a Hellspawn again. But Al was the only person that's ever made it, you know, that he said it was his master. So Al has more control over the symbiotic suit than he does. But just looking at some of those pages, I was just like, man, it really turned a lot into Venom.
There's a page where I think it's just the costume that's attacking Jim.
Mm-hmm.
The inks on that page are fucking ridiculous.
Oh, inks throughout everything within here. That's what I wanted to get to next. The page layouts, like, I don't know what the official term, but the boxes, whatever you'd say, but there's stuff where... You see,
just talking panels?
Yeah, panels. That's the correct term. Yeah. some pages they are drawn just simplistically, but then when shit's going down, like rough around the edges, you know, good there.
Bleeding
like,
out into the gutters.
Yeah, just yeah. Like shit's blowing up, and so are the panels, which is kind of cool. When things are dying, you know, or blood splattered, you see the little ink droplets within the rest of the page that I'm just like, just adds a little bit extra to this book. And like, there's just so much exploding, so much stuff that is drawn within this book with all these pages that it's just beautifully done.
It is actually really pretty. So
that's... So as I said, I've hopefully the readers that or listeners that do read this enjoyed it as much as I did, not having a fucking clue really everything that went on, but seeing at the end, along with those couple letters, the V, the I, and the L, or the 715, all those things to talk about the resurrection again of Al Simmons. And I really want to know what the fuck he's been doing, so I'm picking up 251 to find out where this story goes.
Well, Tony, rather than just getting on the internet and like, just looking up like on wiki pages and shit like that, what's gone on, you could actually pick up your last 200 to 225 issues that you need to pick up, or you could pick all of them up digitally now, because here's some news, kids. Yeah, you like that?
Yeah.
This ties in perfectly, because this just was announced this week, actually the same day that issue came out, that all 250 issues of Spawn are now available digitally. And the one thing that that I noticed. Well, here's the thing. Now, like if you're say maybe not quite as far as behind as Tony, and maybe you quit around issue 125, you can get issues 125 through 250 for $99.99. You get the first 124 issues for $99.99, or you get all 250 for $174.99.
That's a pretty good steal for that many comics.
Yeah, I mean you're talking roughly maybe 75 cents ish a page. I mean I'm just doing drunk math right now, or 75 cents an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Approximately. So, yeah, that's pretty fucking good. So anyway, yeah, you can get them through Comixology on there. But yeah, go check that out if you guys are interested. Tony, what other news came out for you this week?
Well, have you checked out the Daredevil trailer?
Oh fuck yeah, I did.
It looks awesome.
It does.
And when I was watching this, though, of course I'm thinking of you, like I always think of you whenever I'm sitting watching TV. I don't know why.
Whenever you're not with someone else, and sometimes even when you are, you're still thinking about me.
Yeah.
I'm pretty special like that.
What are your thoughts on his mask?
You know, okay, when I first saw a picture, I was like, it's okay. When I saw it, like, in motion, I'm like, I like it.
Yeah, when I first saw the stills that they had of it, I thought it was a random, he found, like, it's going to be his first thing, but he's going to make a full-on fledged mask. Looks throughout this series, not so much, but I like the little flowing little, you know, it's like a shirt tied around his face.
The one thing that when I was talking to Jay over at An Elegant Weapon, when the pictures first came out, he heard people referring to it as like the Dread Pirate Roberts mask, which I'm like, yeah, basically it pretty much is the same mask that Wesley wore, just without the eye holes, you know. I'm really looking forward to it, and it comes out April 10th. All, like, 12 or 13 episodes or whatever come out on April 10th. There's no fucking waiting. I already told my girlfriend that if she doesn't want to, that's fine, but I am binge-watching every episode that weekend. And we should have a pretty awesome interview with at least one of the cast members lined up after that point. So, can't say any more than that yet.
There is one thing I do want to just your thoughts on it. Because of the new mask within the series, not having eye holes, as we said. And I was starting to question, actually, why the fuck he made eye holes on his original costume, since he can't see. So what's the point of that? And then I was thinking, well, I guess maybe to not have his, you know, bad guys realize he's blind or something. Does this give a different dynamic of whoever he's fighting? They're going to be like, he's not looking at us. Maybe we should start thinking, who's a blind man that has ninjutsu powers, you know?
Yeah,
I feel like it could make a different dynamic for, you know, smart bad guys to start thinking,
there aren't any smart bad guys.
That's true.
You know, that's why they always go to jail. Be good, kids. Okay. So, speaking of other TV stuff, AMC, which I finally watched all of Breaking Bad.
Oh, you did watch all?
Yeah.
Okay. Because when we were talking about before, fucking what happens to Mike?
Oh yeah, that was
the saddest part.
Yeah, hands down.
So seeing him, I know what you're gonna be talking about.
Yeah, so Better Call Saul is a series that's a prequel series. excuse me, coming out on AMC, and AMC is releasing a digital version of a Better Call Saul comic book, where, you know, it's basically, it's going to be, I think it's just a one shot, but it's kind of cool that you can go, you know, check out this digital book and find out about Saul and Mike and what's going on there. So, you know, if you wanted to kind of, I guess from what I understand too, if you didn't watch Breaking Bad, this comic is kind of like a guide to who people are, and so they can maybe like catch on to some references and things that they touch on. So
that's what I wanted to say though, is just seeing Mike within the trailer, I'm like, oh, he's alive. Yay.
Yeah, that did make me happy. So what else is out there, Tone?
Well, as my computer's running slow, how about you tell me?
Okay. There's some interesting movie news going around, a couple different things. The first one is Sony just got the rights and agreed to do an adaptation of the new book from Jeff Lemire and Dustin Nguyen called The Sender. This is interesting in the fact that Descender, number one, comes out in March.
Okay. So they've announced this. So maybe it's the comic book's based on a movie.
Well, okay, no, it's not based on a movie. But it's just that, like, wow, what is, you know, the world coming to where movies at this point are so out of ideas that they're like going, you're writing a comic? Can we have that? I mean, I'm sure it's going to be a good book. I mean, Lemire and Nguyen, I think, will do a great job. The idea is that it's like this book is about like a young android that's trying to find a way home. And I don't know if you've seen the picture or not that's been released for it. I'm very interested. I'm also intrigued, though, because this reminds me a lot of Battle Angel.
Okay.
Just in that whole, like, you know, the android, like the human face on an android head and body, you know, like when that kid, like, pretty much becomes all android. And
did you ever look into that, if they're still making that?
Last I heard, last I knew, James Cameron still owned the rights to it, but I don't believe he's done anything. I know that he's wanted to for a long time, but they wanted to make it into like a live action movie, and I don't know. You could, I think, but I don't. I mean, especially now when you look at shit like Avatar, and you know, before it was just the idea of being able to make a movie like that was pretty much unobtainium. I mean, you couldn't like that one.
Yeah,
you just couldn't do it. But now, you know, I mean, it's not so alien anymore.
Gotcha.
It's another James Cameron reference, right there.
All I could say is yeah, because I was trying to think of something I couldn't.
Oh no, I know it's a titanic task to try and think of anything that he's ever done. So anyway. some other
my heart will go on. I don't know.
Really, that's all you got?
Yeah.
Wow. How about we just you know, we'll come to the end of the line and we'll just say, you know what, it's time to Terminator all these jokes. So, one other yeah, God, I love that. That was fun. Oh, that reminds me. Off topic, not really news. So I'm driving over here today to come over to the studio and. There's a show on the local AM station here on Saturday mornings, and it's like it's about like gardening, and so they have some of the worst puns ever on that show. And this show's been around for at least a decade now that I know. But whenever somebody is on with them, and at the end when they go to, you know, be gracious, they tell them thank you very much. And the other one, they said, they're like, yeah, next week's show, it's going to be a kick in the plants.
I like it.
And I'm just like going,
oh. The show's kind of growing on me. Oh. Seed what I did there?
Yeah, I did. You went out on a limb and took a chance.
So I was kind of questioning or wondering why, what's with The View and Marvel announcing all these things on The View, because they did, either it was Captain America or Thor, it had probably been Thor because she was going to be a girl, so why not go on The View to announce this?
Mm-hmm.
So for me, they're announcing a new Marvel Avengers, you know, assembled group. And
you're like, hell yeah, I can finally watch The View and have an excuse.
Yes, exactly. Then it made sense, and it tied in that they are having an all-female Avengers thing, which seems kind of like a cash cow.
You know, this is such a double-edged sword for them, because, you know, everybody is like clamoring for, we want female-led things. Why can't we have this? Why can't we have that? You know, there was the one X-Men book here recently that was all women, that I probably would have continued to be reading right now if I wouldn't have dropped all of my X-Men books, because I finally just said, fuck it, I gotta cut the cord. And, you know, it's the answer to what everybody wants. But as soon as they give them that answer, everybody goes, fucking sell out. It's like, what do you do? You know, I don't know, but you know, they've got G. Willow Wilson and I think Marguerite Bennett on this, you know, as writers. So you do have two women that are building the story and working the characters. Why they call it A-Force?
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, I guess it's better than V-Force or something like that. But
you know what though, this is going to be interesting the next month. Well, the next year. With a lot more female-centric, you know, stories coming out, if they are actually, you know, are the sales going to support them? Can we look at the metric and say, hey, people have been talking about this, we've put it out there, you know, but we can't just keep churning out a couple books for a few fans that are bitching the most on the internet. So,
well, and it's, this is interesting, though, too, just because of the fact that There's some things about it. Now, I know that this is like a different universe, basically, from what I read. Like, okay.
Yeah, because it's looking like it's part of the
Secret Wars, crossover shit. But it's interesting because, you know, you look at the, I didn't count them all up, but I'd say there's, you know, roughly 30, 20, 25, 30-ish, maybe, characters on the cover of this. Maybe it's only 20, I don't know. But you look at them, and you've got Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers there in her current costume. You got Rogue from the 90s. You got Dazzler from the late 70s, 80s. You've got Jean Grey as the Phoenix. You know, not Red Phoenix, but Green Phoenix. It's like, okay, you're all over the place as far as time frames. You see Jubilee way in the background, still wearing her like X-Men animated series shit. But you've also got Spider-Gwen. Now She-Hulk's in the front wearing her like 1980s outfit. I'm just curious about what the, you know, because it, all these characters seem like they're not coming from the same current time.
Yeah.
So I am curious about that. There's, I think what was interesting about this, though, is that Marvel went to these authors and said, create a team of all women, and you can use anybody you want. The only stipulation is you have to create one new character. And so they've got this new character in there, Singularity. And she's the one that you don't even hardly notice on the front because she looks like, well, basically, you're seeing through her. You're seeing, like, a cosmos.
Oh, okay.
In her. And
yeah, I guess I missed that first time I looked.
Yeah. She's basically, I guess it was like a pocket universe that became sentient.
Okay.
And since Singularity didn't have its own gender, it chose one. So it's like, oh, I'm going to be a woman.
That's an interesting character.
Yeah. So, I mean, I am curious to see what's going on in there. You know, but I guess it's Nico from Runaways is going to be a dominant character in here, and she's been kind of having a resurgence as of late. One character I didn't notice on the cover, No Hope Summers.
What happened to her? The mutant messiah.
What the fuck? Like, seriously, like, you know.
She had her own series and everything.
The Generation Hope series, it just canceled, and she's gone. Like, they didn't even bother trying to kill her. Like, they're like, I don't even think it's going to be worth trying to kill her. Let's just sweep her away. Like, I don't get that one.
Yeah, I do remember she was, and I haven't gotten X-Force in a little bit. She was in there with Papa Cable, a couple issues, but I don't know if she's still. She's obviously not a forefront character, so.
Yeah. A couple other things. Actually, this one kind of. We talked last week about that little 11-year-old girl that wrote to DC about the fact that they need to have more female, you know, superheroes. And that they need to have more female superhero toys and all that kind of stuff. They responded, I guess, with like a couple tweets. And now my tablet's jacking up here, Tony. I'd try and get it to work here. But they actually did, and I guess the reason that here we go. Thanks, Rowan. We agree. We're working hard to create more superhero fun for girls. And then, yes, Rowan, girls read comics too. Wonder Woman movie and Supergirl TV both in the works, with more exciting girl power announcements soon. I'm torn on this as to, like, A, I'm glad that they listened and said, okay, we have to have some kind of response. But I don't know. It feels to me like it's just lip service. But then again, maybe they've got a shit ton of stuff in the works, but for obvious reasons, they can't say anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. It's like, okay.
Different subject of something in the works, and hopefully it pans out. Come on, internet, make it happen. Mel Brooks was talking to Adam Carolla.
And I heard about this last night. I completely forgot. I'm glad you brought this up.
Talking about he wants to do the sequel to Spaceballs called Spaceballs, The Search for More Money.
Mm-hmm.
Would be an excellent time right now with the resurgence of regular Star Wars coming out.
Yeah.
Like, just the talks of it alone at least shows that there's an interest on his part to want to do this. And it would be great if he could get the original cast.
I mean, especially if he could get John Candy.
I know. Well, unfortunately, John Candy, good replacement could be...
Chris Farley?
Yes. Oh, shit. John Belushi?
No, he'd be too old. So, yeah, I don't know. Who would you put in that part? Because fucking nobody can fill...
Well, did you know The robot, the C-3PO robot, that was Joan Rivers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Until people started talking about this, I'm like, holy shit. Like, I knew that, but it's been a while since I've watched it, so yeah. I forgot that, and I'm like, wow, she's dead too. They should just start off the movie with, like, them sitting around, like, a graveyard, like, you know, they're dead, like, half our cast is dead.
Well, it's just the two of them, but, I don't know, can they get Rick Moranis out of hiding?
That's the one, that's the big thing, and I would hope that he would, I know that he said he doesn't want to do acting again, but maybe just be like, okay, this could be my last opus to go out on, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. What? That would be, and I'm pretty sure Daphne Zuniga's available. You know, so it's, and you know Bill Pullman would do it.
Or just recast them like they're doing with the other Star Wars, like, why not?
Well, yeah, but I mean, Bill Pullman would do it. You know he would.
Yeah.
I mean, he just seems like that kind of guy. He's like, fuck yeah, I'll do that. That's going to be a blast. So, okay. So, I guess there was some question because Brian Michael Bendis was, you know, leaving Uncanny X-Men and all new X-Men. But he is remaining with Marvel, and they did renew his exclusive agreement. So, there's that for you kids. Convention coming up, a Wizard World over in Wisconsin here. And I'm assuming, and I guess here's the question. Because this article that I saw is that there's a Madison, Wisconsin-based company called Mobcraft, and they are doing a Comic-Con brew for Wizard World Comic-Con. So I don't know if it's going to be available at every Wizard World. Actually, I take it back. It's actually for the one happening this weekend, and so it's got to be
exclusive.
Yeah, in there. But it's basically the Comic-Con brew that they're doing is a pale ale that has some orange juice and orange zest there. So just think it's kind of cool that, you know, conventions are getting the idea that, yeah, us nerds like our beer.
Mm-hmm.
So one last thing I had, and I don't know, Tony, if you had any others, but
nope.
The comic book from Joe Casey and Chris Burnham called Officer Down, Downe, is getting a movie treatment, and M. Sean Crahan from Slipknot is supposed to be directing it.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah. This is, I don't know if you've ever heard about this book or not, Tony, but the idea is that this officer, he is immortal. And so he can just go through anything. Like, he'll be, like, just ripped to pieces and can still get through. And the article that I have, they say, quote, it's like Tackleberry from the Police Academy movies was made into Wolverine and given a Nick Offerman mustache. So I'm really interested in this because this could be really fucking cool. So anyway, news, more info on that movie when it's in production, I guess.
Okay. I'm going to start a new topic, new whatever segment, and it will probably go the wayside like every of the ones that I've come up with.
It's mostly because, like, you know, it helps, like, when there's some planning on these in advance.
Well, it's just because I just thought of this. I just remembered it. So doing some research on the upcoming Secret Wars and everything, I started going through some different wikis, and Marvel Wiki is a very good one to give you different ideas of different characters and trying to understand the different worlds that are going to be part of Battle World. And I came across a character. So I'm going to bring up obscure characters every now and then just to give them some limelight. This week's in the inaugural is Smegma. Mutant from the...
Wait, that's an actual fucking character?
Yeah. Now, you got to take this with a grain of salt, though, because this is from the What If comics. So, but it is a world from the Xavier School for Hormonally Overactive Adolescents. And like I said, just going through this, I was just looking at it. I'm like, they really named a character this? Holy shit. It's kind of like a pretty much a fire and magma type person. But yeah, I kind of just wanted to bring up that there was a Smegma character in Marvel.
That's actually really disgusting.
I know.
Like really disgusting.
That's why I didn't tell you beforehand. I want to see your reaction of, like, what the fuck?
Yeah, that's really, really disgusting. All right. Before we move on to, let's see. We've got Indie Turnpike and we got Booze in a Book we got to do along with our trivia question for this week. So I'm going to quick do Indie Turnpike. This week I have Cluster number one from Boom Studios. This is written and lettered by Ed Brisson, illustrated by Damian Cusiero, and I hope I'm pronouncing your last name right, Damian. I apologize if not. Colors are Michael Garland on this one. And now I got the variant cover. Trevor Hairston did the...
That's kind of fucking creepy.
Yeah, the Boom 10-year cover on this. So this is it's a futuristic story, and your main character here is Samara, and she gets into some kind of drunk driving accident, and you're realizing, okay, yeah, it's there's a car there, but you realize it's futuristic when it's a police, like, space
hover car
that comes over to get her. Flash forward. And all of a sudden, Samara is waking up on some kind of, like, helicarrier type thing, landing on a different world and you find out that she's been in, like, you know, like hyper sleep or cryo sleep for 2 years traveling through, and she's got a pretty good scar on her face, so you can tell that she was injured in the crash. But this is their prison on here. It's and I think the reason that I wanted to bring this up is that it's reminiscent of a couple different things. It's reminiscent, number one, of recently Bitch Planet, you know, where you have all the women that are on that separate prison world. And I wanted to bring it up because it's so recently done that I read Bitch Planet, I liked it. I read this book and I loved it. And I don't want people to compare just because there's two similar ideas. This isn't something really you should be comparing with. But the other thing, and this is another Boom book that I kind of wanted to address, it has a similar feeling in this alien world that they're on of Six Gun Gorilla.
Okay.
And I love that series. I don't think this is going to be anything quite like that. I don't see how it could, but... this is a good old fun prison thriller kind of adrenaline type thing, you know. And it's fun because, you know, there's a girl in here that's trying to talk to Samara, and it's nice because we're used to all these tropes, you know. Oh, it's prison this. Oh, it's, you know, prison world. It's whatever it is. And I love the fact that this character, Grace, who's trying to become friends with her, goes, "You never watch any prison flicks?" You know, totally yeah. Addressing the fact that, yes, shit's going to be cliche. And I think that's one of the great things that Brisson did here is by showing that, look, you have to get through this shit in order to set the tone and create the world. Otherwise, you can't just... jump in and go, on a prison planet.
Yeah.
You know. The one fun thing that I like, and there was a movie years ago that this reminded me of, but they have, like, when they get outside, and I'm not gonna give much away here, but when they get outside, they have details. Well, they have something implanted in their chest called the punch. And basically what it is when they walk out, they're scanned, and they got a little thing on their forearm, timer. A little timer on their forearm, and basically they're punched out. They got 24 hours to get back. If you don't, it just basically liquefies your organs from the inside.
Oh.
Now, there was a movie years and years ago that I remembered that people had collars on, yep. And it was basically kind of like a dog fence, and if you got too far outside the fence, it blew up. But the trick was is that it wasn't just you. Yours was paired with somebody else. So
I do remember that movie. I can't remember what it was called.
But. Yeah, but that it just kind of has that thing with it. Artwork in this book was pretty damn cool. I mean, especially for alien worlds and stuff like that. It was done in a very solid way. So, you know, overall, you know, Damien Cusiero, I apologize if I'm not saying that right, but really nice work on here. I'm not familiar with anything he's done before, but Boom's notorious to bringing new talent to light. So go check that one out.
Do you ever have an image of what, like, a prison planet would look like something that just sticks in your head whenever you hear something like that?
A lot of times I always think of desert.
Okay.
Just more than, you know, because otherwise if you're in like a forest or something like that, you could find enough stuff to live off of. Like, you know, I just say desert because...
it's desolate.
Yeah, if you break out, oh well, you're going to die.
My mind always goes back to Aliens 3. Like, just the coal mine, whatever, like,
yeah.
Shitty planet. So, kind of like a desert, but not...
Yeah, like not like a desert at all, like just with a lot of rain and stuff too.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly like a desert. All right, so all right, guys.
Booze in a book.
Yeah, booze in a book. This week though, trivia question for now, for people that don't know, if you guys go to inkwhiskey.com, you can see the flasks that that are available from this company. If you guys want to enter, you have to answer a trivia question. Send us an email at drunkoncomics@gmail.com with your name, address, and whether you follow us on Twitter and or Facebook. You do need to be following us at least one of those places in order to win. One entry per question, so one per week. And then next week, you will get double points on it. But correct answers only on here. So this week, the question is, want to know the name of the person, not his superhero name, but the actual person, who has pretty much been unlucky in love, in the fact that he's had one girlfriend has been murdered by an enemy. He's dated a schizophrenic that wanted to murder him, and dated a nice girl that turned into a drug addict and whore. So, who is that character? Email us your answers. And here after next week, we're gonna pick a winner, and somebody's getting two free flasks from inkwhiskey.com.
I don't know why I'm just laughing to myself. For some reason, unlucky in love, I just started thinking of Howard the Duck. Why? I don't know.
I don't know either.
Yeah.
Because he banged Leah Thompson. So,
all right. Part of that movie.
Booze in a Book this week is Nameless, number one from Image Comics. It's written by Grant Morrison, art by Chris Burnham, colors by Nathan Fairbairn. And I'm pairing this. Goes back to last night playing
Cards Against Humanity.
I'm pairing this with a very special version of Boone's Farm, Strawberry Hill. Now, for people that aren't familiar with Boone's Farm, it's wine, and I'm kind of using that term loosely, but I think it technically does count as wine. About 8-ish years ago, Kevin had a wine and cheese party, and I was working at a terrible job with very little money, and but I still wanted to go, so I brought a bottle of Boone's Farm and some easy cheese, because that's all I could afford. That bottle of Boone's Farm has been in Kevin and his wife's home since.
Shut the fuck up.
It's been hanging on the wall in their little wine holder. What color is Strawberry Hill, Tony?
Like reddish? Pink?
Yeah. Not anymore. This has turned like clear. Almost like unhealthy urine.
Ooh, that cannot be good.
So I stuck it in the snowbank for a while and then went and got it. And yes, I drank it.
Shut the fuck up.
So the reason that I'm pairing Nameless with 8-year-old Boone's Farm is I think I liked it. I'm pretty sure I liked it. I'm a little confused on events overall. And yeah. But it made me happy. Well, so there you go. And that's literally the exact same thing for both the book and that booze. Like I might still be tripping today. I'm not sure. So, anyway, that's Booze in a Book, inkwhiskey.com. Thank you, guys. Last call, Tony?
I really didn't have many books this week.
All right, well, I got lots.
Yeah, so. Well, I can name my two Black Vortex Alpha that started off this event. That's what I'll say about that. And then Avengers came out, which, fuck, man, I wish you read this stuff, Derek. There is some, I don't know, it's amazing. Yeah. So,
all right. A lot of stuff for me this week. I picked up a new book, which I have not been able to, I've just glanced at. And one of the reasons I kind of held it to the end is it's very dense. A lot of 9-panel pages, or like in this case, there's like a couple 20 panel pages with a lot of stuff to read in here. I'm curious. It's from a publisher, Astronaut Inc., that I've never heard of, and so I figured I'd just give it a shot. But this book is called The New Zodiacs from Astronaut Inc., and it's a number one. So, like, you know, I'm going to give it a shot. So I don't know yet, but I figured I'd at least mention it because it's something I hadn't seen. Postal number one from Top Cow / Image. Oh, God, Witches. Witches number four from Image. Star Wars number two, I liked better than Star Wars number one.
That's good.
And another action figure cover, the Han Solo cover.
You're going to collect them all, aren't you?
Yeah, and then I'm going to have to like put them in like a special little box. I'll get them all CGC'd and stuff, and I'll be like, you can't open them, because otherwise they lose their value. I think that Boone's Farm is still hitting me. The Woods number 10 from Boom Studios. Punisher number 15, and The Bunker number 9. I mean, fucking phenomenal week in comics for me. So, it's a shame that you know. I know that you kind of trimmed your list back a little bit out of necessity, but.
Well, some of those titles, you know, I'm like, oh, man, I go into the comic book shop, I'm like, I can't really afford it right now. I'll just have to start waiting for the trades.
You know what you could do? You could get caught up on the rest of your trades of Saga.
I could do that.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you're not buying that many books, you've...
I have free time to read.
You got a little bit more time. So, all right, anything else, Tone?
No, that's about it. I'm looking forward to recording later on with Dirk Manning and then throwing that up there later this week.
Yeah, we'll see if we can continue the Dirk Manning Raven Gregory grudge match that we started.
Yep.
So, all right, guys. Well, keep reading your comic books. We'll be back next week and talk to you more about them then. We'll see you.